Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The sluggish U.S. economy has left us with what economists call the new normal, characterized by job loss and the loss of homes, loss of businesses, comfortable salaries and circumstances, and the increase of circumstances that put individuals in situations that are more stressful, more difficult, anything but the old normal, I guess. Today, we're talking about how to comfort those around you at work or at home, perhaps next door, who are suffering from financial hardships, who are living this new normal. Joining us today is rehabilitation counselor Val Walker. She's author of The Art of Comforting, What to Say and Do for People in Distress. Welcome back to the show, Val.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
To our listeners, we'd like to hear your stories about how someone comforted you or someone you know when the chips were really down. Were you surprised at the source, surprised at the approach? And what can we learn from the experience? If you have a story to tell, give us a call, 614-292-8513. So, Val Walker, let's talk about that new normal and what we mean by it. Why is it called the new normal?
Because things have changed. Our sense of reality is a little different now. We look at the future with a lot more uncertainty and sometimes more anxiety, fear. Our safety nets seem to be changing, and we don't know really how things are going to turn out in the future. So the new normal means more uncertainty, and with that, probably more anxiety. But when it comes to being a person who teaches people about comforting and does counseling with people, I've really wanted to study the emotional impact of all of this uncertainty. You know, when is my job going to have cutbacks? You know, when is the other shoe going to drop off? You know, this sort of living, what could happen next? As well as even if we're slowly recovering, there's still a sense that, well, the way we used to live just may not ever come back.
And that's sad. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going hungry, but it's still important.
Yes. And it puts us in, actually, I think more middle-class folks are living more in sort of a survival mode mentality. You know, they just feel like they can't quite, you know, get out of that survival angst, you know, and really relax and smell those roses in life and try to, you know, we're kind of on guard, a lot of us, you know. So it creates a tension and a stress in us, and it often, you know, I've got some really interesting studies on how it affects caregivers from the National Alliance for Caregiving with this famous study called the Evercare Survey, and it's really showing how much, you know, these changes are affecting caregivers and making them feel more strapped with their time and strapped with their out-of-pocket expenses and things like that. So if you're a caregiver or a comforter role in your family, you're feeling the pressure.
My guest is Val Walker. She's author and grief counselor. If you have her book is called The Art of Comforting, What to Say and Do for People in Distress. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Depending on what you've lost, a job or a home or maybe a spouse, a medical crisis that impacts on finances. Do those different kinds of scenarios have different sorts of impacts?
Well, they generally are all pretty similar, but there's some differences. And let me just give you, if you like, some just examples of way we might talk to someone who's gone through a loss and show you some similarities between when you offer comfort to someone who's lost a loved one and how you can also say similar things for folks who've lost a home or lost a job. A lot of times we just have to acknowledge first and foremost, and that grief is grief, loss is loss. And the most comforting thing you can do with any kind of loss is acknowledge it and say, I'm so sorry this has happened to you. You know, if we skip over and try to, you know, problem solve or fix the problem or tell folks, you know, what they need to do, that doesn't allow that person to have a real honest feeling about it. So one of the most important things you can do is say something, I'm so sorry this has happened, you know. I also, if you would like to use this moment now, have some ways we could maybe say things to people who've lost especially a home, a job, or had a big decrease in their status or hardship. You know, things such as don't preach and say, you know, be strong, you need to stay positive. You know, it might be better to say something like, I believe in you, I've seen you land on your feet sometimes. Things like, you aren't the only one going through tough times. You know, stuff happens. It might be better to say something like, well, you already had enough on your plate, like you really didn't need this. And stuff like comparing, saying others have it worse than you. Mm-hmm. I mean, just think of all those other people, you know. And it's so important not to compare somebody's hardship to somebody else's. That's a huge thing, whether you've lost a loved one or lost a job. That's, if I was going to do a big fat no-no, don't compare. Because, yeah, so no. Those are just a few things.
Well, let me ask you this. Before we get into some of those comforting ways, what to do and not to do, what about the problem of people who don't want to talk about it? I had a friend. We had went out with a couple for dinner, hadn't seen him in a long time, was out of town. And we have this nice dinner, but I noticed he was quieter than usual. He wasn't, you know, didn't seem right, but that was okay. It wasn't any big deal. And it was only later on, like a day later, that I got a call from his wife who said, well, he'd lost his job and he didn't want you to know about it. I was like, well, you know, I thought that's too bad, but I'm sure he has a right to his privacy, but not everybody wants to talk about it, or should they
that's
talk
right.
about it?
Well, one of my biggest, I suggest following the lead of that person. If the person does want to talk and makes a comment, those kinds of things, like I said before, can be very reassuring. But a lot of times people do not want to talk. It is private, and it does bring up a lot of sense of, ooh, you know, I don't want people to see. I might not be as adequate as I want people to think I am, or as, you know, I'm afraid people are going to think I'm weak in some way, so I don't want to show this side of me. So it's so important to respect that if people do not want to talk, there are other ways to be present to people that can be comforting. And it's very comforting not to feel that you have to talk about it. There are ways to enjoy showing that you're just enjoying being with that person just because you care about the person. Just companionship is comforting enough. If they want to just watch some golf on TV and you just hang out with them, that is just as comforting as having a big heart-to-heart. And, you know, some people might just appreciate some offers of assistance, like, you know, could I, you know, maybe watch your child, do some child care for you while you go out to an interview or you go look for some new homes, offering assistance, like, could I get you some groceries? Or, you know, just showing that you care is really what it comes down to. It doesn't mean you always have to talk about it.
When people lose a home or lose a job, there is a grief component to it.
Right. Right. There really is. And when people are grieving, a lot of times they're not ready to talk about it, and they're afraid that if they do talk about it, then they're going to have to problem solve and figure out what to do about it. And when people are really devastated, especially in the early stages of a loss, they're pretty overwhelmed with the feelings a lot of times, or just in terms of their mental outlook, they're kind of confused. They're kind of in shock. They may not be able to wrap their thoughts around, which means talk about it. They might be kind of just confused about it, and if they talk about it, they're going to feel like they're kind of, you know, meandering with their words and not making sense. You know, it's like we live in a culture where we say to people, get to the point, you know. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? How would you like to be helped? A lot of times when you're devastated, you cannot get your mind wrapped around what you want or need right away. So gentler ways of just standing by that person, showing that you care, and just checking in with them from time to time, give them little opportunities to find their own words when they're ready.
My guest is Val Walker. She's author of The Art of Comforting, What to Say and Do for People in Distress. And we're talking about people who are in distress for financial reasons. Maybe they've lost a job, they've lost their home, they've had a decrease in income, or they're taking jobs just to get by. Maybe they've had a death of a spouse or a divorce that affects finances. Give us a call, and if you have a question or comment for Val, or if you want to tell your story, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to Facebook and post your question or comment there. So what not to say is compare people to other examples.
Yeah.
What and just sort of be there. But how do you maybe let's say it's time to move on and it is time to start talking about strategies and
right.
and that sort of a thing.
Well, I have a couple of tips about that. When you think it's been some time and that person's had a chance to, have a chance to grieve for a while, sometimes people are ready to just have a brainstorming session with you, to problem solve. But it's so important that you don't come off forceful. Like, one of the first things you can do is recognize an interest or a strength in that person. I call it the strengths-based approach. That's actually a very popular counseling approach. Is find the strength or the interest in them and look for, there are little signs somebody might show you, like their eyes light up when they talk about something. Go with that. Ask about that. They might be talking about a supervisor they used to have a few years ago that might spark something in your conversation. Hey, have you thought about calling that supervisor for a reference? Or, say if they lost a job. Or let's say, you remind them of like an accomplishment story, like, oh, I remember that time you did so well, you handled that so well. I believe you could probably do something like that again. I've seen you come through these things. So a more sort of safe, encouraging way to get them to talk about where they're comfortable, where they feel strong, and where they have a natural interest in something. Don't bring it, it's not about you bringing in what you think they should be doing. It's more saying, I care. Have you been thinking about some new contacts? Did you have any ideas recently? And ask open-ended questions that aren't so much yes and no, like who might you be thinking about? What interests you these days? So those kinds of things tend to open up a conversation, open-ended questions for sure. Like, I'm wondering about this, or, have you found any good books that help you or any good websites that have helped you, things like that.
We're talking about how to comfort people who are in financial distress. They've lost a job. They've lost a home. Give us a call and join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Westerville residents are divided over how much they're paying for their schools. The division runs so deep, some families choose not to even discuss the issue at the dinner table.
We need good schools for our children, but we also need to manage the budget so that we're...
If we cut schools, band out all the sports...
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News. Your all-day NPR News station.
This is 89.7 NPR News. 74 degrees with sunshine, warming up to a high of 87 today. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 59 degrees. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences, which announces the exhibition B.B. Miller, Tracing History, on view at the Urban Arts Space today through September 29th. The opening reception is today from 6 to 8 p.m. More information is available at uas.osu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Val Walker. She's the author of The Art of Comforting, What to Say and Do for People in Distress, and that's what we're talking about. But we're thinking specifically today about people who are in financial distress. There's a lot of that going around. The economy still is sluggish in many parts of the country. Ohio is doing a lot better recently, but there's still a lot of people out of work, a lot of people who have lost their homes, a lot of people wondering how they're going to get their kids through college. Maybe they've lost a spouse recently or they've been divorced. It's a lot harder to snap back these days from those kinds of economic changes. Val, I was thinking about that movie, Up in the Air, the George Clooney movie, about the company that does the layoffs and how it affected people going through that. And I know in a lot of companies, when there are layoffs, you're not allowed to talk to the people. There's this whole, I'm not quite sure why it is. It's probably legal reasons or something like that. But if you are a supervisor who is having to lay people off, or you have people you supervise who are being laid off through no fault of your own, does it help to know that people back at your job care about you? And is there anything from that point of view that you can do for someone?
Yes, I do think there are ways to convey that you're cared about. You mean from the workplace point of view?
Yes.
That you're still being remembered. You know, a simple thing you might want to do is a tribute to a worker or something like that, you know, with a newsletter or something online, you know, a thankful, offering thanks and appreciation and remembrance, you know, a kind of tribute to that person and what they gave us, and so that they feel remembered and special and that they made a difference somehow.
So it is something, it can be comforting then.
Yes, and the way you talk to someone, the way you approach them, it's so important to let a little bit of your own empathy out, your warmth out, your care out. They can feel, if you feel it, that person can tell that they care, and that can be conveyed nonverbally. You know, basic things that show respect and care to a person, your eye contact, your tone of voice, allowing that person also to speak, listening well. When you're giving some tough news, it's really important not to go too fast and allow that person to respond, listen, and then at the same time, you know, reassure them that from a genuine place, using a very specific example, that you do believe in that person, that you've seen them, and that you recognize their strengths, and that they can use those strengths in other situations in the future. Like, I really valued this about you. I could see you continuing to do this in this other way in the future. Things like that.
Robbie in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Robbie.
Hi, yes, this is Robbie.
Mm-hmm.
I had an incident where someone was able to offer me comfort that made a huge amount of difference. I'd lost a job here in Columbus after 22 years, excellent job, and I'd been outsourced. And I'd become an over-the-road truck driver. So there I am, brand new over-the-road truck driver. And I drove through the snow the first time in Massachusetts to a place where there wasn't enough room in front of the warehouse door to get the truck straight, which makes it extremely hard to position the trailer. And they wanted the trailer door just so.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up hitting the wall at the warehouse door and knocking part of it down. And I was concerned. I mean, I could lose this job, too. And the two warehousemen there were offered comfort that made a huge difference. The older gentleman in his 50s bought coffee for me and the other warehouse man. And the other warehouse man, a young Mexican man, was very gentle with my soul, was how I felt. He said, when you go to sleep tonight, don't worry about it, because you'll be able to do what you need to do in the morning. And it was just amazing that sense of comfort and relief that came through, even though the wall of the warehouse was still partly knocked down, and it was, you know, still had to deal with my company.
I think what's amazing, Robbie, is it's kind of almost where you least expect it. They were strangers, right?
Oh, yes, they're strangers, and I'm sorry to say that many over-the-road drivers, people from other countries, are not well-regarded. But it was, I've always been the kind of person who says,
thank you. And people always appreciate it. It's like magic when you're dealing with warehouse people. I don't know what he recognized in me, that I needed help at that moment. And that I was at a, you know, just at a real stopping point.
Yeah.
And he just encouraged me, you know, go to sleep, Jack. I'll be able to deal with it in the morning.
Thank you so much for that story. That is so perfect. I think that sums up everything we would like to communicate to people today, is being present to people in a way just like that, and doing sometimes the simplest, most caring things speak volumes.
Yes, it was just amazing. And the 5 years I drove that truck, I remember to say please and thank you, and people responded to it. And sometimes when there was a wait, I would still look from one of the warehousemen that said, you're next. You know, and the last thing I heard, it was going to be 2 hours before they could load her up.
Well, Robbie, thanks for calling and sharing that story.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye. Bye-bye. If you're just joining us, we're talking about helping people through tough times when the chips are down. There's a lot of people out there like that right now. Things are getting better, but there's still a lot of people. And we are also talking about the new normal. They may get a job, they may get another home, but it might not be what they had once. They're going to have to change what their expectations are in life, and that can require a certain touch as well. My guest is Val Walker. She's author of The Art of Comforting, What to Say and Do for People in Distress. Interesting story from Robbie. Those were total strangers.
Yes. It is interesting how much of an impact you can make just by being kind and being out there and what you can do. Sometimes strangers and those sort of neutral people in your life can do more sometimes than family caregivers who might be strapped that particular day. So I want to emphasize, you know, sometimes the way we get comfort is bigger than just what's around our closest people. There are lots of interesting ways right in our communities people can show comfort with each other. I want to emphasize, too, that the act of connecting with others in general and reaching out in general, the more people get comfortable with saying, you know, asking for help or understanding that others are in similar situations, you know, just being able to ask for help and give help, I think we're getting more comfortable with that. I spoke with a director of one of those first call for help lines. I've spoken with some different national directors who work on those 211 phones when mm-hmm. people call in for help. They're like hotlines, but they're more for community services.
Right.
And just FYI, more and more people, just the so-called middle-class people, are calling for help and for more connections, plus a lot of these things you can get online. But I think people are getting more comfortable with feeling like it's not just about pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps and just your own individual thing, but feeling like this is a community thing. This isn't just about you. This is about all of us.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. What about, you know, when there are big layoffs, lots of times people form, support groups.
Right. Well, I'm going to, first of all, really recommend support groups, because when people have common situations that they can really identify with, it definitely kind of makes that group feel safer, and that when people have a common issue, it's not only a safe place to talk about some of your difficulties, but, you know, to vent a little bit, perhaps, but also in a good support group, you don't only have a chance just to kind of vent and grieve, right? There's got to be a little bit of chance to grieve, but then it goes to a more problem-solving, generating networks and contacts and resources and, you know, using their resources and sharing those. And that's a very comforting feeling when you know somebody or you have a contact or you found this fantastic website with all these good jobs listed on it. It's so great to share those things. People like to share what they find out along the way. So I'm going to highly recommend support groups and networking that way. I'm going to also highly recommend that we keep routines in our life as much as normal when we're going through a lot of change. You know, our favorite kind of hands-on routines, especially that ground us, that give us a sense of the old normal when we're going through the new normal. There might be favorite pastimes you or your family did together, keeping those alive, especially the simple ones that don't cost money so much, but making time to enjoy the old routines as well, keeping up routines. And that especially applies to children. When you're going through a lot of change, whether it's a financial disaster in the household or a loss of a loved one or a divorce, and that all, of course, affects finances. But keeping life feeling normal as much as you can, your favorite little routines and things. Another thing is be careful not to overpromise too much to your loved ones if you're providing for them in some way. You know, don't just say, you know, kind of keep your promises open and vague, but try your best to kind of offer something specific that you know you can deliver on. Like a common thing we say to people is, call me if you need me. You know, everybody says that to everybody, mm-hmm. but when you're setting yourself up for a little bit of extra chaos there, it might be better for you as the comforter to offer something specific like, would you like me to call you Monday night? Or I could check in with you. Or could I pick up your groceries Tuesday? You know, if you keep it in little steps instead of offering the world, oh, I'm there for you, just call me anytime, that takes the pressure off of you as a comforter and provider, including if you're a parent or a loved one taking care of somebody, and you're bringing it down to size and in steps. And I really want to emphasize that since the new normal, I think our sense of being there as available in the past has changed. We may not have quite big chunks of time available anymore, so we may have to size it down to little steps when we're available. But that doesn't mean we're offering them less comfort. It's just a little more, being a little more specific and realistic. Don't say, I've got all day. Say maybe, well, here's an hour or two I can come by. And I think people are finding that with our technology, too, with texting and email. We might have to be a little more specific. But people find you very reliable if you can deliver on those things. In other words, somebody who keeps a promise to call Monday, mm-hmm. it really means a lot, even if they only call once a month. That might mean more to somebody who kind of has an empty promise. So I wanted to emphasize that since things seem to be, people are so strapped now, that a little bit of reliable, true comfort where you do deliver on that one thing you promise goes really far. Because when people are stressed out, they want to count on things.
What about if you've lost your job? How much should you let your children know that things are changed, things have changed, so that they can be maybe part of the solution, or is that too much information? What should people do? Because there's probably a lot of pressure to keep things normal for their kids, and that's not right. necessarily going to be possible.
Well, you can keep things normal, like putting dinner on the table at the same time, you know, mm-hmm. keeping the routines when you walk the dog, or, you know, how you clean your house or things like that, that kids really, really need that grounding of seeing you doing normal. But it's also very fair to be honest with your children and say, you know, we've been through some changes and this sometimes makes me feel a little nervous or a little sad. And you might see me cry. Maybe. Or you might see me, I'll still put that dinner on the table for you, but you might see me look sad sometimes. And that's because I am worried, but I'm still also doing things to get help. I'm going to this group. I found this good person. So yes, you can reassure the child that you're doing things to fix the problem, but it's not fair to be 100%, you know, blanket the whole thing and just say nothing's happening. You do need to acknowledge that something's changed, but you have to reassure them that you're doing things about it and that you're also looking forward to the changes. Go ahead and share, you know, this might be a good thing. Maybe something good will happen. I'm looking forward to my meeting tomorrow with this great new company. So let them see your hope, you know, but you can't always hide your sadness or your nervousness to say, you know. So, and sometimes when a child comforts you, you know, and they're cheerful or they're telling you a funny joke or something that happened at school, say, oh, that just made Mom feel so good today. I was a little worried about my interview tomorrow, but you really cheered me up. Hmm. Thanks so much, you know. Kids like to feel like they make a difference.
Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Dogs are barking at animals. I was saying that when I was listening to your guest, it reminded me of something that happened a few years ago with me. I was this was when I was living out of state. There was a truck, pickup truck, and it had the most amazing Aztec painting and symbols on it. It was just beautiful. And I had a card with me, and I just wrote on the back of the card, "I love your car. It's gorgeous." And then, like a year later, or maybe it was the same year, it was probably the same year, we had a Day of the Dead celebration in the middle of the street. And
a Day of the Dead, right, in October, or is that?
Yeah, in October. Yep. And there was I saw the truck again, and it had become the focal point of this man's honor or remembrance of his father. And I came up to him and I said, "I don't know if you know me, but I put a little card on your car, and I just thought your car was beautiful." And he burst into tears, and he said, "I was having the worst day." He said, "That was the day that I found out that I was HIV positive. And just getting your note made my day so much better." And he gave me a big hug and thanked me. And so, I mean, you just never know when you're going to, what you're going to do that is going to make somebody's day. And that was a much better experience for me than, gifting somebody with the free $2 to get over the East Bay Bridge, because I just got annoyed because of the person. So that's just what I wanted to share.
All right. Well, thanks, Beth.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I guess you never know, right, Val?
Yeah. And, that it works that way a lot. In fact, I want to suggest that when we offer comfort to somebody, it's so important not to have strings attached to see an immediate result, whether they're grieving the loss of a loved one or the loss of a job. You know, folks have so many different emotions about it. We might never know for sure if it helped or not. And the beauty of giving comfort, offering comfort, is just kind of letting it go and sending it out there. You never know, but it does feel good to offer it. We can't always know for sure, but it is amazing what happens. Little things come around and go around.
Yeah. My guest is Val Walker. She's the author of The Art of Comforting, What to Say and Do for People in Distress. We're particularly talking about people who are in distress over financial reasons. Maybe they've lost a job. Maybe they've lost their house. Maybe they're going through a divorce and life is going to change a lot for them. It's hard times. What can you do to help? If you have some ideas, an experience you want to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
President Obama opposed the Citizens United decision that created super PACs, but super PACs are where the big money is. The president also has a reputation for not sufficiently stroking major donors. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Jane Mayer about her article on Obama's fundraising problems called Schmooze or Lose. It's published in the current New Yorker. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And you can learn more about All Sides with Ann Fisher topics and guests by liking the show on Facebook or follow WOSU All Sides on Twitter. It's 75 degrees in downtown Columbus with sunshine today. We'll reach a high of 87. Clear skies tonight, a low of 59, more sunshine and a high near 90 on Friday. Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org. And support for 89.7 also comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com. And All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the art of comforting people who are in financial distress. Maybe they've lost a job. Maybe their spouse has lost a job. There's a big lifestyle change ahead. Maybe they've lost their home. My guest is Val Walker. She's the author of the book, The Art of Comforting, What to Do and Say for People in Distress. If you have a story to tell you think is on point, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to the Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Val, we have an email from Samuel. He writes, I have been going through a hard time recently, but when I see friends and family, I hate to bring it up, especially in large groups. I just feel like I bring down the mood of the whole party by talking about it. I have found it easier to talk to people one-on-one or to talk via email.
You know, that is the way, honestly, most people are when it comes to money or status or loss of a lifestyle or way of life. It is really common that we would prefer not to share it with the family or with a group setting, and that fear of bringing everybody down. This is very much more common than not. And that is why I believe finding some very sort of safe, maybe kind of private person out there that you can talk to. It only might take just one person. It could be a pastor at church. It could be your hairstylist. It could be, you know, just somebody out there that cares. It could be a neighbor. And it, even if it's not just about talking, but having that person just to enjoy your company once again, if that person who's not talking about the loss of the job, this person who emailed, is still there with the family and connecting and showing his love and his enjoyment of being with people, that really is the most important thing. Because even if we can't talk about it, the big message I want to get across today is that our human-to-human connection, when we're just being together in any activity where we're sharing and showing our love and our care, whether we talk about the issue or not is not what's important. The thing is being in each other's lives and showing up. And even if this gentleman who wrote the email is feeling somewhat, you know, bad about it, if he's still there with his family, doing things with his family, he's giving a lot, and that's enough. It really is. So I wanted to emphasize that. And I wanted to also put on, I have a really big issue with some of the money pundits out there. I've been having some conversations, which will be up on my blog next month, with a CPA and an author and a personal finance specialist named Jane Honeck. And we have had some really important talks about how in the media sometimes we feel like folks are pointing fingers at us. You should have done it this way. You should do it this way. A lot of shoulds. And that stuff can cause anxiety and shame inside of us. Some of us take it that way. I'm not saying it doesn't work for other people, but for some of us, we can really feel worse about ourselves. So my big message, too, besides being connected with our loved ones and joining in activities, whether we, even if we don't talk about the problem, is please, when it comes to being with yourself, have some compassion for yourself. Be willing to say, this isn't all just a reflection on me. There's a lot going on in our world right now, a lot of forces I cannot control, and be willing to embrace yourself and love yourself anyway, because that love and compassion you have for yourself will make it easier for you to sit with your family when they're cooking you a big dinner. It'll make you able to hug that child around you. If you have some love and compassion coming for yourself, it's going to radiate out to others. And it's really hard to do that because, I hate to say it, I think our society, for some reason, puts a heavy-duty whatever blaming thing on people who, you know, for one reason or another, just ended up not where they wanted to be. So I just wanted to say that.
Anna Marie in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Anna Marie.
In hearing your show, I was recalling an incident that happened to me, God, I think 30 years ago.
Anna Marie, you're going to have to turn off your radio.
Oh, okay, thanks. Yeah. Just a second. Yeah, it is pretty loud, isn't it?
All the way.
I was getting gasoline from my car, and I was at a pump, and I knew that I couldn't. I had very limited money at the time, very, and so I thought I maybe put in $2 worth, but the money was, and I wanted to see how much the gasoline was. So before I got the money I had, and I had quarters, like $2 in quarters, and I came back to the pump, and there was a very attractive young black man at the next pump. And he saw what I was doing, that I had quarters, and he handed me a $10 bill. And I don't know what his name was. He was a DJ, but I never forgot it. I never forgot it, how kind, how responsive he was, and how pleasant. He made no big deal of it, whatever.
Wow. That is so good to hear. These things will happen now and then, but that is just heartwarming to hear that.
Anna Marie brings up an issue, and Anna Marie, thanks for your story. We really appreciate it. Val Walker, what if you do know somebody who is in dire straits? They're going through a really hard time. What if you do have a lot of money and you can help them out? How do you offer somebody help like that?
You said if they have a lot of money and they can help them out?
Yeah, if you can. Ooh. If you're in a position to help somebody, how do you offer help like that?
Well, it's a huge, huge subject, and that could, open up a lot of cans of worms.
Right.
Talking about it, because it's a really sensitive issue, because what's happening, I've been reading more, what happens with us recovering from the new normal is that some family members and loved ones are going to be having more than you. So it's a very awkward situation when what used to be a more even playing field when it came to everybody having a certain amount of money, mm-hmm, has now got these, it's not so even. And I would say that it's best to not over-offer, over-promise. You might, again, follow the lead of the person who's in distress. The most important thing to offer is your care and interest, checking in with them, calling them, or emailing them, seeing how they're doing. First and foremost, before you even think of offering money or any kind of assistance, just showing that you care. That's above and beyond anything, just caring. And by showing that you care and listening, maybe you have a good conversation with that person and you really get a sense. You got to listen and see where their need really is.
Mm-hmm.
There may or may not be a need for money, but maybe some way that you can help, something maybe you could, there's a room in your basement that could be rented out for somebody's kid going off to college who's struggling or something like that. There might be other things you could barter and trade. That's kind of common sense. But sometimes if people really are having a hard time, probably offering a little bit at a time and sort of testing it and seeing how that person does with it. Because really big loans and things like that can get very, very messy and
right,
full of a lot of feelings. But take it in baby steps. Maybe offer just a little and see how that person does with that. Who am I to say? I think it depends. Before I open my mouth any further, it depends on that particular family.
Mm-hmm.
They may know each other really well and know what to do. So, I would like to say above and beyond everything I just said that it depends on the unique family, their own needs.
My guest is Val Walker. She's the author of The Art of Comforting, What to Say and Do for People in Distress. We're specifically talking about people who have fallen on hard times. Still a lot of people out there without jobs or who are underemployed, which is another element of the new normal.
Yeah.
If you have a story or example you want to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So what about that? You know, you got into it a little bit, that your circumstances have changed. A lot of people, you know, if they're losing their job at the wrong time in life, they may never get back to what they had before. That's a whole different story.
You know what? This underemployment issue is becoming more problematic. We used to think it was more the unemployment problem. What we're seeing is a lot of folks being underemployed to keep going ever since the economic downturn, especially if they got laid off. And they may see their... Oh, that's so hard and sad to talk about, but they may feel in some way their status has changed and their sense of pride has changed. They're not doing the more glamorous job they thought they should be doing, and that causes a lot of tension, too, with coworkers. You may have somebody who's really overqualified for a job doing things, maybe answering to a young supervisor that's not long out of college. A lot of these things are happening, which I think are causing a lot of stress that's not as written about in the media just yet. But there are a lot of complicating factors going on with people underemployed. By the way, 27 million Americans are considered underemployed, and that's about 20% of the population, one in five Americans.
And it's in a country where, you know, your job is everything. And for a lot of people, and we really define ourselves by our jobs. And so it's not just, you know, you got a job, be happy, but there's more to it than that. You know, I've got an email from Connie here that might play into this a little bit. She writes, I lost my job late last year, and it was an unusual circumstance as I was on program staff for a large church here in town that I was also a 20-plus year member of. I was let go because of budget constraints, but the manner in which they released me was very painful as far as trust issues go. All that aside, I truly appreciated the support from friends who would just be present with me and let me grieve this loss. I had others who had never lost a job telling me, I feel your pain. I know how you must feel. Trust in the universe it will provide, etc. Those comments were not needed at the time. It's been 10 months now, and I found another job after 7 months, so things are looking up, but I still find myself grieving the loss of the previous job at times, as there is still hurt and pain there. But I look at it like losing a family member in the first year is the most difficult. That's an interesting...
Boy, she sums it up. I think, you know, because when you lose a job, you're losing relationships, human relationships, and there's natural grief and loss. And what she said is right on. I think we have a really bad habit of saying to people going through hard times, you know, I understand just what you're saying. You know what? It's so much better to say something like, I can only imagine this, or offering them to talk about it more instead of sort of shutting them up with, oh, well, I know, you know, what it's like. What she said is right on, and that continuing grief is very, very common, and it's okay to continue to feel that loss and embrace it and see it as normal. That's very important. But her email really sums up a lot of things about this. You will miss those relationships and those times and a certain identity you had with that particular role. We miss our identities and our roles. That's a huge part of the grief that, again, I just don't think we give each other enough appreciation for. And when you have a person who loves you, no matter, you know, for better or worse type of thing, you know, for richer, for poorer, when we say that vow to when we get married, supposedly, we could still say that vow in a sense with our friends and loved ones who are having a hard time and, you know, reassuring them that it's the company and the good relationship that they have. The relationship is more important than their status or their what they're doing. And keeping that there as a foundation for that person will help the person recover.
Anne in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Just wanted to share, I've just completed a 3.5 year from unemployment and heading out of state for a new position that I'll start on Monday. But part of my story is that while most people, certainly over half, would express sadness, I found that it was important to identify, selectively identify individuals where I could confide about our hardships and foreclosure and downsizing. But for most, I made it a priority to talk about the things that I did have the flexibility to do, particularly family and community oriented. Because I was no longer working extensive hours, I had the flexibility to be present for family and friends.
Before that, had you been working a lot? Were you a...
Yeah, I was a fairly senior executive and worked for one company for 20 years, went through a merger. I had been commuting, so I chose not to continue to commute, and had about a one-year break between jobs. So that was not such a big deal. But again, financially, it was very difficult. Mm-hmm. As I shared in the preview, we are individuals of faith, and so that helped. But certainly there were moments and maybe extended periods where I was crying and depressed and trying not to dwell on that with family members. But it was a challenge. I mean, I have to be candid.
Val Walker?
Oh, well, the challenge is it is scary. It can be scary, and back to what you're saying, how it opened up some flexibility and new opportunities. I'm glad you were willing to step into those new opportunities and go into them and not allow your fears to get completely in the way of finding how this flexibility in your life could be really bringing you some great new things in your life and opening up doors. But at the same time, we have to kind of do both, I think, most human beings anyway, kind of deal with the fears on one hand, but also open up to the positive changes that are on the horizon at the same time. That's in any grieving process. We're kind of in between the two, and sometimes we have a certain person or a certain support group or a certain comforting group that can help us with the fears, but at the same time, we're making time in our life to be flexible and to kind of learn. I really have to emphasize being willing to learn new things and try out new things. And again, we might have certain friends and people that are wonderful at saying, oh, I believe in you. You can do this. And let's try this. Let's explore. So a sense of adventure and a sense of what's new, I really highly recommend for the new normal, we embrace that a bit and find buddies along the way who want to try out some new things with you. And I don't want to sound overly optimistic and kind of Pollyanna, but I think we need to really look at what an adventure is and trying to find courageous ways of trying new things. It gives us an opportunity in our life to do that.
And congratulations and good luck on this new adventure.
Thanks very much, and thanks again for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Thanks for that, yeah.
New adventures, change can be good. Watch how we compare ourselves to our friends. Take advantage of the free time and be in the living in the present, right, Val?
Yes. And remember compassion for yourself and others, compassion and how it generates an ability to relax with other people and open up. And sometimes when you're not so anxious, you're going to be willing to, a little more able to hear what people are saying and open up to people, too.
Val Walker, thanks for joining us again. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed the callers and what people have been saying. It gives me a great spark.
Val Walker, she's author of The Art of Comforting, What to Say and Do for People in Distress. Thanks to the AllSides staff, associate producer Amy Jurevich, AllSides assistant producer Corinne Gleckler, AllSides production assistants Katie Higgins and Leticia Wiggins, and volunteer Rose Joe. Thanks for listening. This is AllSides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org 89.7, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.